Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Kia ora, welcome to the Aotearoa Rugby Pod on rugbypass.com and Sky Sport. And what a weekend of rugby it was again. Super Rugby has just got super interesting. James Parsons here in the Auckland studio. Bryn Hall down in Christchurch. And before we get on to, you know, drop goals and things like that, Bryn, we've got to talk about this shirt. His A game, since coming off the playing paddock and becoming a businessman. Look at this. Do we have to up our game?
Mate, I'm just trying to lift the standards with me old mate down there. Just, you know, just well, constantly.
Mate, I'm in a black AS colour t-shirt, and I've seen Chipper obviously wearing the blue shirt, and then on the weekend as well, that Highlanders game. Jeez, was that a three-piece suit there, Chipper?
Mate, I was just trying to, you know, lift my standards. I was trying to lift my standards to Marshall's standards.
But as sharp as you are, you're not looking as sharp as the Chiefs right now.
No, I'm not. I'm not. They are on some sort of roll. And I honestly think the biggest part of their turnaround is their set piece. The last time they played the Crusaders, they ran their line out at 40% and scrum at 50%. On the weekend, 100% line out and 100% scrum. And then obviously since their four-game winning streak, they were 100% line out against the Canes, 83% against the Blues and 70% against the Landers, and their scrum was 100% in all those games, including a tight head against the Blues, and the Blues were obviously the form scrum. And I think that platform, and we already knew about their breakdown ability and the fact that they could, you know, recycle ball at a tempo, and at stages on the weekend, the tempo got the better of them. I think they ran a little cut play and an inside ball to a blind runner, and he ran into Brad Weber. And even Brad Weber was blowing at one stage, you know, because the tempo was that fast. And they had so much territory and possession that it took its toll. But they are on form. The one thing I have got to credit the Crusaders is, one, you don't have to give them much for them to take an opportunity. Mm. So that to their own standards, and Bryn will elaborate on it, they're not playing anywhere near their best, and they're still in a position to win these games. Won it last week when they didn't play at their best. So you've got to credit, you know, you've got to admire it. I admire it, to still not be playing at their best and still be in a position to win it. And Brad Weber's comments at the end, to be the best, you must beat the best. And they left a lot of their best cattle at home. So we're still not there yet. One, that's awesome that Brad Weber knows that they're not there yet and they still want to head on that trajectory. But, you know, they also sends a message that the Crusaders aren't at the best yet, and, you know, teams are still chasing them and they're still the top dog.
Yeah, those are all pretty valid points from Jip. And I think the summary of my game that I probably had there, this is probably going into your domain here, Jip, with a few stats. And probably the losing of the game for us is probably that third quarter, just after half time, the 40 to 60 minute mark. Yes, so we attempted 131 tackles in that 21 minutes, whereas the Chiefs attempted 7.
Yeah.
You know, so that's some pretty interesting stats. And, you know, you talk around that tempo, Jip, and their breakdown, you know, they were pretty brutal around that. They scored 14 points in that 20-minute zone and really brought their momentum back into the game. So a good comment that, you know, Brad Weber actually talked about in the post-match was around holding on to the ball. And for most of their tries that they did score, they were at that kind of 10-11 phases where we let tries and penalties early on in the game. So, yeah, did really well. And again, when you're making, you know, we attempted 250 tackles in a game to still be in a position to win the game, it's great for us. But again, we can't afford to be tackling, you know, attempting 250 tackles to 80 to the Chiefs. You know, they're getting too much ball and it stunts our attack. And, you know, we're probably a little bit sloppy attack due to that many tackles in the game. So, you're just going to make sure we've got our review tomorrow, and, you know, we've just got to make some pretty probably our changes around our breakdown, I think. Again, we're still struggling in that breakdown area where the Chiefs are really dominant in that, their collision contact. And
even, you know, even to the discipline point, I was quite surprised that the convincing lead you had at halftime, Bryn, did you feel that as well? Like, I think the penalty count at one stage was 6-1 at halftime, you know, in favour of the Chiefs, and they tried to build that scoreboard pressure, and then, you know, there was a bit of a flurry of tries, a try that got that lead into the break. And that's what I mean. Like, you don't have to give the Crusaders much for them to make you, you know, make you pay. And it's, you know, it's, you know, I know that they're irritated that they're losing, but it's a compliment, but it's not a compliment. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, it just shows that they've still got plenty of in them. It's just they're not stringing their usual phases together, and it's taking the toll, the amount of defending they're having to do, especially against teams like the Chiefs, because they do hold on to the ball and they recycle it quickly through that lightning quick ball, and it's relentless. And the biggest thing is I think, you know, they had 39 defenders beaten. You know, that's hard when you're beating that many defenders. That means you're getting in behind the defensive line. Mm. So you're always chasing your tail to get in behind, and it's just too big a task at times to shut down. Whereas, you know, the Crusaders had 13 defenders beaten, so they're not having that same, Bryn mentioned around that, you know, that breakdown, that not having the same front foot ball to get that lightning quick ball. It's a lot easier to clean rucks when you're getting in behind that defensive line to get the lightning quick ball. If you're not getting in behind, it's, you know, you're having to move a little bit more set bodies, which is harder.
Bryn, this seems to have been happening over a few weeks now. Is there a touch of frustration in around the camp and not being able to fix the things that you know what you need to fix? It's just not happening yet.
There is frustration because, again, you want to be winning games and you want to be playing to the way that you want to play. And so I think teams are holding on to the ball a little bit more. In that period of play, I talked about 40 minutes in that 40 to 60 minute zone. The ball was in play for 9 minutes for the Chiefs, and we only had it for 2 minutes. So, you know, teams are holding on to the ball against us, which is good. And I thought they adapted really well with that set piece as well. They went over the top of the line out quite a lot. I think the times just after half time was pretty good as well. I think Damien McKenzie, his kicking game was really good. He had some good variety around his long kicks, even early on in the game. I think it was the first scrum attack. He ended up kicking it into our zone, finding some grass and then applying pressure that way. And then in the second half, he changed a little bit around doing contestables off 10. And then they get a good pay around that where our boys didn't catch the ball on the full. And then the times that they did have that ball, they scored tries off that. For us, it's been able to get a few things right, like the points that I've brought up. And again, we've just got to be honest around that. We'll have a good honesty in our review. And then we've just got to make those changes. Again, we know what they are. Some of them we do know what they are. Again, it just comes down to execution. So we've just got to make sure we execute a little bit better in those departments.
I suppose the thing is that there was a chance there to win the game, but you guys would be looking at this the same either way, wouldn't you? Whether you'd won or lost, those issues remain the same depending on a drop goal winning the match.
Yeah, absolutely. We had, you know, considering that, you know, we made that many tackles, we were still in a position even before that, before Damo's penalty, we're in a position where we're in the lead. And then just do a bit of ill discipline again, which cost us that penalty for Damo with 3 minutes to go. And then we still had our chance to, a very similar scenario we had against the Hurricanes going into looking for a drop goal. So I didn't want to be in those positions, but in these derbies, you know, these teams, especially the Chiefs, like we talked about last week, they're fighters, and you know they go to the 80th minute, and that's what they did on the weekend. So if we find ourselves where we've got to go into a drop goal, you know, again, we've got to be better at that breakdown, which was probably the least of the game, not getting that that breakdown and that last breakdown penalty by Arcoy.
Yeah, and one of the things I noticed in the lead up to that, there were probably maybe two breakdowns where Richie was in position in the pocket, but the ball came to you so slowly. Was that the reason why you couldn't get the ball back to him?
It's funny, hindsight's a great thing, and we were getting ready to kick pretty much straight after that penalty. But again, that's the risk that you have. The week before, you know, we probably went a little bit earlier, and then that one there, we left it a phase too late, and then, you know, Akui makes a great play around getting a turnover. So again, you've just got to be a little bit better, a little bit more ruthless, and the week before we were, and then unfortunately on the weekend, it's rugby, and you know, our equipment play, and we weren't able to give it back to Richie. He was in the pocket, probably getting ready off that ruck.
So what were the comms coming to you from Richie?
Oh, similar to last week, we're getting ready to do the drop goal. So
I'm not ready yet, and you're like, okay, I'll get another ruck.
It was just a feel like that before that ruck. They did a good counter ruck at that ruck, and so the ball's a little bit slow. And so the defensive line probably a little bit more set and probably knew that Richie was in the back. And so we wanted to go another ruck to try and set it up a little bit better. And if we would have got that ball out, it's a better kicking angle as well. But yeah, again, fair play to Arcor. He made a great play and won them the game in that moment.
Sorry to harp on about this. When you say kicking angle, would he prefer a ruck to his right-hand side because the ball's going to come to him here as opposed to left-hand side where the ball's coming from there and it might take him longer to get around to kick the ball? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, ideally, that's the positioning. But again, it's dependent on how the ball is going. The defense line isn't set. Then all those kind of variations come into the decision-making around that. So, again, if we find ourselves in that position, we just need to be a little bit better and so we can get the chance to have a drop goal in this scenario.
Yeah, we can let it go now.
Well, I think we can let it go. We can also congratulate Arcoy. I think a pretty bold play. You know, like sometimes it's you consider, do we just D it out and just not give away the penalty? And, you know, he just backed his instinct there to get on the ball. And, you know, when Scott Barrett went for the challenge, I was like, oh, you know, has he done something wrong here? Because it was obviously going to be on under the microscope. But he was perfect in terms of attacking the ball. Nowhere was he off his feet or on his knee or his hands went and touched the grass. And that's a big play by, you know, still a pretty inexperienced player. And he just nailed it. And it was, you know, massive congrats to him for, you know, just backing his instinct, not worrying about the moment or what point, because it could have easily have gone wrong and he gives the penalty away and they lose. But he wasn't worried about that. He just played rugby and played what's in front of him. And I think that's a massive pat on the back for him to just play rugby in that moment, because so often you can think about the situation, the circumstance, and let that sort of maybe scare you out of just playing based on your instinct. And he didn't let that happen, and he nailed it, and what a result for his team.
I suppose the hard part about a ruck is you've got the discipline aspect of it, don't you? So if you're the defending team, you can either see it as a chance to end their drop goal chance by going in on the ball, or a chance to give away a silly penalty and give them the shot at goal. So yeah, it's a difficult situation to go in and do something like that.
Absolutely, and I think it was actually a great tackle by Nate Harris, who it was great to see him back after such a long break. He's worked his way back from injury, so it was, you know, congrats to him seeing him back. But he did a really good chop tackle, got low, got the carrier to the ground and got out of there. So it gave him all rights and access. As you saw, a lot of penalties that night, they were penalised because the tackler didn't get out of there. So every time they went, the actual jackler was fine, but because the tackler didn't roll out of the ruck, he was the one getting penalised rather than the jackler. But Nate Harris made the tackle, chopped him to the ground and got out of there straight away. And then Arcoy was on the ball. So everyone played their role perfectly in that moment. Had they not, and had he got trapped in there, doesn't matter what Arcoy had done, it would have been, the penalty would have been based on the tackler's role. So it was just a perfect scenario. And from what had already happened, they'd learnt from, you know, what they'd already been penalised earlier in the night, which is perfect.
Arcoy's having a hell of a season, isn't he?
He is. And as I mentioned about the line-out shifts, you know, between him and Tupouvalu, you know, like it's been massive. It's been massive, the shift and the growth in them as line-out leaders. It's such a harder job than, you know, Sam Whitelock and Scott Barrett and co. make it look, you know, easy, but it's not. It's such a hard job calling a line out and manipulating defence and getting that ball won. And they're getting creative. They're really thinking. Actually, Neil Barnes needs a pat on the back as well as a coach. So does Nick White and the shifts they've made in their scrums. You know, because it's a collaboration. And that is a big cornerstone to their success and their turnaround. Mm.
Bryn, what do you see out of them? Obviously, we saw them under Warren Gatland last year struggle. This year under Clayton McMillan, it took them a while, but they seem to have found their feet. What do you see as the major shift from 2020 and an abysmal season to 2021? And they look like they're coming strong at a final position.
Well, I think it was always going to happen. I think we talked about it earlier in the year around, we thought, you know, they were doing some really good things, even though they hadn't gotten the results. You know, they were playing some really good footy, and it only took one game. It took one game for them to get their mojo back. So they're adapting. So I think last year with Warren Gatland, they were just, I guess, in that kind of middle stage of having a new coach and maybe not having an identity and trying to figure out what Chiefs rugby looks like with obviously a new coach. But they seem like they've got their tactics right this year. You know, they've won four games in a row. Their style of play that they're playing, like I said to you, their kicking options from Damo has been great. The different types of kicks that have been putting teams under pressure. They've had different phase play shapes, which have been successful again in previous weeks. So I think they're just marrying up really well. And again, we said earlier in the podcast, they're a proud team and it wasn't going to be long. All they needed was a bit of luck, which we talked about.
What are you seeing in their shapes?
Look, I think they would have had a fairly robust discussion around their plan together. I don't think it's Warren Gatlin and Clayton McMillan last year and then it's all different this year. I still think they are a team and they would have come up with a plan together, and that's still, they're a united force. I don't see it as two separate entities. I still think they're together and that will continue on next year once they're back. So I don't see it as so much as what's different between the two sort of setups. What I would say is, speaking to Sam Kane, is he said, he felt like last year, they were that close on so many of these results, that there wasn't a lot in it. Whereas, this year, the tides turned on a few 50-50 calls that sort of changed their luck a little bit. And they've grown confidence once that luck turned in that Hurricanes game, the belief starts, and that's how it's sort of changed. So I don't think there's a hell of a lot structurally, there's so much of it is mental, and that belief and that energy that comes from it, and they've just stuck to their guns a little bit. But I still believe that that first game of the year, even when they lost, the quick 22s, the quick tap nature, the clean outs, the brutal force game that we saw, and we sat here and said, and I said, look, I don't want to compare them to 2012, 2013, but there was reflections of that for me. And then now that they're getting their set piece sorted, there's very much that flavour to it. And I think we saw that again the other night. Brad Webb has said they'd like to win it by more and not leave it to the last minute, but they're winning games. They know how to win games because they're fighters, and that's what they've built themselves around. So I don't know if that really answers it that well, because I just don't think there is a separation between the two. But I think, once that luck turned for them and they've got a few of their core big rocks sorted, they've started to believe in themselves a little bit more.
It is an interesting scenario, though. I think it's probably an unprecedented scenario where, let's say, and they went to the title and they won the whole thing, and suddenly you've got the coach who won the title having to move back to assistant.
How do we not know that they're not connecting?
Yeah, yeah.
We don't know. We're not in their environment. How do we not know that Warren's not involved? We don't know. We're not in there. So he could be playing a big role. We've just got no clue. He might not be playing any role. He could be having Zoom meetings with players, leadership groups. He could be doing all sorts that we don't know. We'd only know if they told us, but there's no way they're going to tell us. So we're guessing. And I don't think it's a problem they mind us discussing, because we're discussing it because they're going so well.
Yeah, 100%. They're winning.
But I think Clayton does need to have a big pat on the back, because under pressure of those first two games, everyone was like, oh, this is a, he's been throwing a dud. He's been throwing a hospital pass. And at no one point did he blink. He just stayed calm, and he's, even when they've started going well, he showed some emotion when they've won a close game and they've, as you should. But he still stays calm, and he's on to the next job the next week. And I think that's why they want to play for him, and there's a good, solid foundation there between leaders and coaches. And that's why I mentioned Neil Barnes as well. That he's obviously got those forwards humming with Nick White. And I think it's a timely, comeback for Lachie Boshier. I thought he was exceptional on the weekend. With Sammy being out, for him to come back and perform the way he did for 69 minutes with a bit of club rugby under his belt, with the injuries that we've got at seven, he has to you know, after missing out on All Black selection, I know I digress here, but this is what I do.
Yeah.
But you know, like, you know, he misses out, and he, you know, everyone talks about him being a little bit unlucky. Well, you know, he puts in a performance like that, a couple more of those, and you know, if they can get to the final, he has to be right up in the you know, the chat for an All Black opportunity as well.
He's phenomenal. And, you know, that whole loose forward trio from the Chiefs is phenomenal and have been for a couple of years, really. Even when they've been going backwards, they're throwing themselves in there.
Absolutely, and they're a big part of that lightning quick ball we talk of. But on the actual flip side, a man that played seven in the opposition, who's not a usual seven, was exceptional the other night. Bryn, you guys must have been wrapped. You know, you're obviously looking for putting a big body in there. And he definitely got around the field, but also made his presence felt on the night. This is Tom Sanders I'm obviously talking about.
Yeah, he did, mate. Kurnell, he was exceptional. And I think for a guy that's had such a great season last year and was rewarded with obviously being in the South team, and then to be unfortunately had a pretty bad injury early on in the season to not be able to regain that form and to be able to play footy. Yeah, he's come back roaring. So he did his due diligence around his recovery and was a hundy at training around, you know, he's one of the guys at trainings that, you know, always puts you on edge. So he brings that into the game. And look, yeah, it's a position that he hasn't played a lot, but again, has on the weekend, he had a great couple of good steals, especially in big moments. And then his work rate off the ball as well, around, we talk around breakdowns. He was great in our breakdown and being able to get us quick ball, being that bigger body. So he had a great game. And you know, fingers crossed he can stay injury free, because again, he's been great for us at the time, probably in the last 12 months when he's been injury free. He's had some really good performances for us. So I'm really proud of Kurnell. He's obviously had a tough run a little bit. So it's good, great to see him on the field on the weekend.
He's another one that has to be on the radar as well because of that performance in the North versus South game. You know, like, he was put in that environment and he had a big game that night. And then now, after a bit of another injury, he's come back and performed in an out of position. You know, like, that's a big statement in itself as well.
I think it is. I think the fact that, you know, he can play six, he's played eight for us as well, and then being able to have that seven, opportunity to play seven and to be able to play all three loose forward trios, we talk around squad members and being able to pick on versatility. If he continues to get, if, you know, if he has an opportunity to play seven again, missed performances like that, then again, his conversation has to be in the reckoning. But being able to be so versatile, playing six, seven, and eight, like we've talked about earlier with versatility, Jip.
There's a number of those guys around, aren't there now? You've obviously got Dalton can play right around the place. Boshier could play both sides of the scrum. Yep. Jacobson can play six, seven, eight. There's a lot of adaptability in and around the loose forward stocks in good form.
Absolutely there is. And there's, you know, you even look at the way, maybe not the ability of versatility, but the performance of Harmon of late. You know, he's playing some great footy, and he was exceptional on Friday night. You know, he really won the breakdown battle, you know, in that Blues Highlanders game. So there's talent aplenty, and then you look at that six battle between, you know, Akira and Shannon, which was just beast versus beast. It was huge.
How do you see Akira going at the moment? I suppose last year there was a lot of fanfare. Is he keeping up to the same standard that he had last year?
I think so. Like, he started really well, and then obviously with big minutes, you know, Tom Coventry's like, we need to rotate. We learned from a few years ago, if you just throw him out there 80 minutes and drive him into the ground, that's no good for anyone. So that rotation with Tom Robinson, and unfortunately, obviously, Tom got knocked out early and Akita went out early. But I still think he's playing extremely well and doing a great job. And the stats stack up with that. So I still think he's right in the mix. As we've said, in past weeks, I think that six jersey and the style of play the All Blacks like, it's between Shannon and Akira for that mix. And the other night, it was two different styles on show, and both of them, you know, held their own. But, you know, Shannon really showed that brute force, especially defensively.
You're going to have to be Superman to get Shannon Frizzell out of that six jersey after last week and the weeks before that.
Yeah, like. But I think you've got to look at... you know, last year's performance in the All Black environment, they do take that into account. But the current form, I mean, Shannon Frizzell was playing out of his skin. Like, it's just unbelievable. I mean, he is... That rush tackle on Harry Plummer...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And then up to his feet, barge through, get a crucial turnover. I mean, that is a hell of a play. I mean, and that was second half. He's already done a big shift. I think it was around 50 minutes. You know, it's a big play. It's a hungry man wanting to win a game in front of his home crowd. And they, you know, speaking to Mitch Hunt after the game, they really wanted to win in front of their home crowd. They were disappointed with the performances under the roof. And, you know, then Billy Harmon said the two areas they really wanted to sharpen up on was their tempo of play, which I think we saw, and then, you know, their physicality at the breakdown. And you know, he was a big part of that.
Bryn, we saw another outstanding set play with Aaron Smith coming out and then popping the inside ball. Jeez. Another Tony Brown, you know, benchmark, stamp of approval.
Yeah, it is, and it comes back to preparation around what they obviously saw. You know, Jonathan Ruru and that's defended at the back of the team. Ufo was the last guy at the back of that lineout, and whether he got caught in that and stayed in there, or they had previously on the other side, they had three guys holding. Again, they see an animation down that way, and then Aaron Smith comes around and puts a great ball for Fanani Punavai. So, variety is probably the best thing around that. The week before, they went down the short side. Blues probably would have seen that, and then they've gone the open side from that. So when you talk around special plays, you've got to have a bit of variety. And so, you know, when you're playing teams, if you go open, if you go down the blind side, you've got to be on it the whole time. So, yeah, fair play. It was another try, another great try. And, you know, adds to the Tony Brown legend of being able to have great moves.
I think this is where they're at their best, though. I think earlier in the season they were fixated on that driving maul and they thrashed it. And the last 2 weeks we've mentioned how the innovation that they've had has been great. And I think that's where, one, you know, Tony Brown's at his best, but also the Highlanders love it. Like, they feed off it, they get energy off those, you know, those moves. And, you know, I think the Blues really miss Tom Robinson going off early, because that's a big part of his game, as he would have probably ID'd Punivai out the back there and would have been able to help his teammates around there, that they didn't get caught up in that maul and they probably could have seen him. But, you know, they didn't, and then it created that space and they scored the try from it. But it was executed perfectly and at a crucial time and a big momentum shifter after the Blues had got themselves right back into the game. And then for them to score on the break like that was a killer blow, and made to look, it was, you know, they did it quite easily when, you know, it shouldn't have been, mm-hmm. you know, and that at that time, at that crucial period, and that's why, you know, Tom leaving the field so early was quite a crucial blow for that night.
Bryn touched on it before and what D-Mac brought with his kicking game. How did you see the way that him playing at 10 evolved? I know you've been a fan of him playing at 10 late in the game, but starting the game, were you impressed?
I liked it. Yeah, I really liked it, the way he approached it. I thought he was really calm in his approach. He was, you know, he was really that general distributor early and just injected himself, you know, when he needed to and when the opportunity presented itself. I thought Alex Nankervell was awesome outside of him. I thought he had one of his best games. I thought ALB was great again. But I, you know, I thought Nankervell, for someone who hasn't played a lot of rugby because Quintupai has been there, I thought he had a massive game, which took the pressure off. And, you know, I think the ability of Chase Tiatia from the back also meant that, you know, Damien could just focus on controlling the team, which he did really well, and the forwards just rolled their sleeves up and allowed them to do that. And they were pretty clear in their plan, I think, of how they, and you have to be pretty strict and clear in your plan to beat the Crusaders, and you've got to be, as the Highlanders showed, you have to be pretty strict and resilient in it for 80 minutes to get the job done. And the Chiefs showed that again. You've got to be strict and resilient in it for 80 minutes to get the job done, because they're a tough side to beat and they will not go away. And as I've pointed out, you do not need to give them much for them to hurt you. So that's why I think, you know, he was really strong in his performance at 10, and I think he would be really proud of it. And the biggest thing is his pressure kicking. His sideline kick, Jonah Lowe, was so crucial to get that one point up. And then, you know, I suppose Richie's miss on Cody's one, you know, those are the, you know, moments where probably it's you're used to it being the other way around. He just had a great night. He had probably his best game of the season, I'd say, in terms of the way he led his team around the park and his goal kicking and the way he put his team in the best place to win.
So does he stay there, Bryn, or does he go back to 15?
No, I think you've got to keep him there. I think, you know, again, even though he didn't run there much, he more had that kind of game management, great kicking, and he was a great distributor. I think, again, once he does get that running game going, it's just going to add more to it. So, you know, we talked around previously around his game management, and at 10 it's a bit, being at 15, even though it's obviously similar in this day and age, but his game management was fantastic on the weekend. So he's only going to grow if he gets more time in there, and then, you know, once he does open up and he starts running, then again, you put those two things that he did really well on the weekend with his game management, his kicking, and his overall goal kicking, you had that running game as well. That's a triple threat. So he's only going to get better with game and time. And what a great time for the Chiefs, especially at the back end of the year where, you know, finals footy is just around the corner.
And on the other end of the ledger, we've got Josh Iwane, and he's now playing fullback all the time. Do you feel, Jipper, that that's the place that he needs to be, considering how well he's playing there?
Oh, I think it's like for like 10 and 15, the way the Highlanders play. I think they've switched Mitch Hunt and Josh up in other games. I think, you know, I can't remember what game it was. I think it might have been the Blues or something. I can't remember. So I don't think it's a big thing. Josh is at fullback or he's at first five. So I don't think it's a set thing for him to be in his position. I think he's playing good footy. He's injected himself really well off the bench the week before. He played well the other night. He looks comfortable there. He's another player when he's got time and ability to see and present himself on the game. You know, he looks silky. He glides. He's got a good kicking game. So look, he just looks like a man that's focused on playing well. And you know, he's just continuing on that form.
He looks like a man who could play test football to me. But when you look at the way it works out, if we're looking at tens, we've got Richie, obviously Bowden's coming back, we've got Damien McKenzie playing well. At fullback, we've got, you know, again, Bowden and Damien McKenzie, plus you've got Will Jordan, you've got Jordy Barrett, you've got all of these people. Does he even fit into the squad?
It'll be depending on the makeup of what they want to go with, like how many first five fullback options they carry. Do they see Damien as a genuine first five? If so, then maybe not, I don't know. So I don't have the answer for that. But he's definitely playing well enough to warrant selection.
Yeah.
Absolutely he is, but so do all the other guys. I mean, one name that we haven't mentioned from the other night that deserves it, especially after his first half, is Will Jordan. I mean, he was just silky. He was seriously good. So there's plenty of talent out there. But that's the beauty of the All Blacks, is there's so much good talent that misses out. The thing is all you can control as a player is your performance. That's the only currency you've got. If you look after that, you put yourself in the best position to be selected.
Bryn, you're a current player. Do you have these kind of conversations at home with your flatmates, going through the lists of who could be where and how and how they could fit into an All Black lineup, or do you guys just drop rugby when you get home?
Oh, you have conversations here and there, especially with when you do watch games. You know, you go on tour and you end up watching the games and you start commenting on how good players are playing, and you need to talk about it just loosely. You know, we probably don't go into in-depth around in the squad who we think it is, because, again, you just kind of fix that on your own thing. But you definitely do talk about it. You talk around the performance around players and how they are playing, and especially in that fullback position, there's so much good talent at the moment. And, you know, I thought Will was great on the weekend, especially in that first half. We look back to his old self around really injecting himself, and you know, you've got no substitute for speed with Will, and you get him in the open field, he's going to get away like he did on the weekend. So, but I think another first of all, I like seeing Mitch Hunt at 10. I love seeing him at 10, and you talk around some courageous efforts. I think he did a great cover tackle on Caleb Clark in that Highlanders game, Highlanders Blues game, and so he's a guy. He's a guy that's just he's playing well as well. So, and I like seeing Hunty and Joshuani at the back. Joshuani's great on the counter attack. His counter attack play, and I thought he was actually in that last try with Michael Collins. His animation out the back for Michael Collins to get through that line was due to Nariki and Ioane's ability to be animated out the back. So I like that setup they have there at the moment, and it just gives Josh a little bit more freedom with his running game, which is so great. It's his biggest strength, and at fullback, you've seen it at the forefront with the last couple of performances that he's had.
Can I just say on Mitch Hunt, there was another one, Gerard Kalitoiotti went through early in the first half, and he stopped him.
Yep.
And then in that first 20 minutes after halftime, Jonah Nariki didn't score until the 59th minute. They weathered a storm. Caleb Clark went through a couple of times. The Blues were attacking after attacking after attacking. And Caleb Clark went through a couple of times, and Mitch Hunt and tackled him once, and I think Joshuani stopped him on the other occasion. And those are two massive tackles, by little men against a big man running at full flight that I think were the winning of that game. Because I think if the Blues score there on those two occasions, that 2017 goes out to a deficit, and then they hold on there, they weather that 20-minute storm, and then they go down the other end and they obviously go to their forwards, and then they suck in the Blues defenders and score in the corner. And that was a big, big moment. And then obviously led to the red card, and then the Blues had just got themselves back into it, and then the red card came, and then that was obviously...
Caleb was busy.
13 carries.
Yeah.
There was a bit of question about him being quiet, but what I want to say about him being quiet the weeks before is he was creating opportunities for others. So a lot of the time when he's decoy, so I'll use the Highlanders game, I'll reference the Highlanders games last time, and I'll be quick about this because I don't need to talk about all the things, but if you, Imani Nawata's try against the Highlanders the first time they played, the Blues versus Highlanders, is Rico's coming short, Harry Plummer's got the ball, Rico's coming short, coming right off his shoulder is Caleb here, and it sucks all the Highlanders' fence, and then Harry Plummer just throws a long ball over to Stevie P, Stevie P draws and pass to Imani. And that's the try. But it's the work of Rico, who's a threat, and Caleb, who's a threat. And it creates the space out here because it sucks in defenders. And Caleb wasn't getting all the ball, and everyone's like, because we're not seeing the highlights and stuff. But Caleb's always running off a halfback shoulder, but then a forward goes through here because Caleb's attract attention, So sometimes when, we forget as viewers, because we're not seeing them running, everyone's like, he's not playing that well. Well, he's actually doing a hell of a lot of work off the ball to create space for other people. And we just need to, acknowledge that. But on the weekend, I think he had had enough of creating space for others.
Yeah.
And he said, give me the ball, I'll create space for myself, and went through people.
Yeah, right, left, up the centre, everywhere.
13 carries, 130-odd metres, line breaks, defenders beaten, big defence, big game.
Yeah.
And he made a statement.
He looks big when he's carrying the ball.
Yeah, I thought Rico was huge as well.
Yeah.
Rico was throwing people off when he got the chance in that try. Great line he ran on the try. There was some good performance in that Blues team as well. Like, I know they lost and they were expected to win, but there were some players that played extremely well for the Blues as well.
Let's talk Rico then, and Anton Leonard-Brown, who also was very, very busy and exciting and showed some of the outside break stuff that we hadn't seen in a little while, as well as, his usual mistake-free stuff that, he does so well. Are these two the two to look at 13 outside of possibly Nani? Let's talk All Black midfield again.
You know,
we haven't done that enough the last
two
weeks.
I've been wanting to marry these two up at 12 and 13 for a while.
Yeah.
We have talked Nani up, and Nani does probably deserve a go at 12. But I would love to see Anton and Rico get a chance as well. But they're going for 13 because Nani's form is warranting selection as well. I think all three will get a go. At some stage and have a spout on the bench as well. What it looks like, I'm not too sure, because they're all playing well, but I think Anton's in red hot form, He admitted at the start of the season that he wasn't up to his standards, but I think if you asked him now, he'd say, yeah, I'm good. and Rico's playing well. I mean, that run up the middle, I don't know if you remember it, Bryn, or if you remember it, he was just throwing people off, and I think he offloaded it to Hoss, and it got knocked on, but like it was unbelievable. It would look like he was back at Auckland Grammar, but he was playing at Super Rugby level. It was incredible.
Talked around Nani around his form, and look, he's been outstanding through the duration of this Super Rugby Aotearoa, but I wouldn't be surprised if they do play 12 and 13, Rico and Rico at 13 and Anton at 12. Don't stop thinking about that, because I think that could be a combination they could see as well. Yes, Anton's been playing at centre, but you know, he has played a lot of 12 with the All Blacks as well. So I do think it is going to be a little bit of a merry-go-round around Nani, Anton and Rico, around they will get the opportunities. And at that next level, it's going to be able to see who takes the opportunity when they do have that chance. And you know, don't dismiss David Harvilli, who's been in red-hot form as well. So his ability to, yes, he's played 15 in the past, but he's had a great season at 12 around. His decision making and his play warrants probably a discussion with the other three players that have been named. So, it's going to be guys going to be given opportunity in that black jersey, and then it's going to again come down to execution and you know playing really well. And like Chipper said, you play the better you play, that's your currency, and that's when you get named in teams.
Even with injuries, it will still be a tough team to pick.
Yeah, and what I like about it is there's a lot of X factor there at the moment. They're all doing that X-Factor stuff.
Yeah.
There'll be no TJ Pettinata by the looks of it, because he might be playing in the NRL sometimes.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, when Bryn was saying do they discuss the All Blacks squad and stuff, I was like, I guarantee you he'd be like, well, Pettinata better go to the Roosters. That might get my name in there.
Was that a question to me, Jim?
No. I think, because by the sounds of it, it's just to finish off this season.
Yeah.
After his Japanese contract. So it doesn't sound like he's doing it to leverage contracts or anything. I think he's genuinely trying to have a crack at league. I think it's exciting. Like we all know I like to talk about a league. I think he'd make a great dummy half, and obviously Jake Friend's just retired due to concussion, so it would be a natural fit. Has he played it before? I don't know. Has he got the ability to go in there, learn their system, learn the game that quickly? It's probably easier going from rugby to league than coming from a league-heavy background to rugby, just because of the rules and the structure. I think if anyone could do it, he could, because one, of his motivation levels, and two, just how much of a competitor he is, and how much he'd love to probably get an NRL trophy ring.
He could start at hooker, just distributing, you know, doing a lot of tackling in the middle, but as it goes on, you could see more Cam Smith coming out of him, more directing of the play from dummy half, all those kind of things.
Oh, absolutely. He'll definitely be vocal. That's in his nature. He'll want to be a director. And if you think of the injuries that the Roosters have got, you know, they've got no Luke Carey there, who's normally their general. So they've got young Sam Walker, who's about 18 years old. He's quite young in stature. They're making a makeshift sort of halves combo at the moment. So someone of like a 70 test experience coming in, they probably would want a general. They would want a vocal nine, someone having that ability to, it might be hard. It might be hard for them to come in there and demand, but they would want someone that has that vocal nature and demands from each other. So I think it would be a good fit, Bryn.
I think is what might take a little bit of time, but again, he's got his style of play, how he plays rugby. I think it's going to transition great into the league. I think probably a great position for him to be, with being able to transition into, would actually be in 14. It might be a little bit more broken. It won't be so much dependent on him coming on and running the cutter for 80 minutes or 60 minutes, and him just being able to, I think, cover lock. He can cover nine, but then again, he might actually be a loser. He's that competitive and can play that physical. So I think he might have a little bit of a hybrid in him, which could be interesting for him moving forward in that kind of 14 interchange role.
Yeah, well, you can get a little bit of 13 into him as well, kind of playing similar to Jazz Tavanga, maybe.
Yeah, like Brandon Smith as well. I just think they've got Nat Butcher there. They've got Sam Verrills coming back. I just don't know if that's the spot they're trying to fill.
But is it feasible to bring a guy in mid-season who's never played the sport at a top level? Like, is that really rolling the dice a bit much?
I think they're probably they're backing themselves coaching-wise. They'll probably be getting to I'd say they'd be leaning on Sonny Bill a little bit to learn a little bit about his character, how diligent he would be to upskill and learn, and how professional he is, and they'd be relying a little bit on that.
If a rugby league player was to arrive at your doorstep, you know, halfway through Super Rugby Aotearoa...
It's hard. It's a total different thing, though.
Yeah,
Going league to rugby, it's so much harder that way. Because of the structures and the breakdown is just such a beast that you need so much more time than going from rugby to league.
But you spend, I suppose what I'm trying to say is you spend all that time in the pre-season, you do all of those things that build a team together so you understand your structures and your play. For someone to arrive
They're so depleted, though. The Roosters squad at the moment is so depleted injury-wise. It's not about that. Trent Robinson was on the radio the other day saying that, you know, he's at 18 fit players to choose from, 19 fit players to choose from in a squad. I don't think they're going to be worried. They are depleted.
Yeah.
You know, you look at Matt Duffy as an example around that. Mm. He was a guy that had played a lot of, you know, growing up playing rugby, went over to the Storm. And I remember talking to him about when his first couple of years here, he was obviously at Harbour. He said it just took him so long to have the understanding around, you know, what it is to be a fullback. And obviously, Russ and Shep will probably go through the same situation around. There's just so many when it comes to our game, and whether that be a breakdown or it's a pendulum, it's different plays you've got to know. It's not just like, you know, not to say that league isn't just, it's a little bit, I wouldn't say it's easy to play, but, you know, there's a lot of block plays and the limbs play very similar, whereas rugby, there's just so much variety and you've got to understand so many different things around rules and how you play. So, but I think, you know, you've got to remember as well, you know, TJ is that competitive, and, you know, I look at, he actually spoke to Brandon Smith around, you know, certain things that he wanted to look for. So it's pipeline for a while. So he's, you know, knowing TJ, he's probably talked to the right people who's needed to talk to. Is it feasible? Is this a genuine option of this happening? So I think when you've ever got a guy that's played that many a games in rugby at the international level and at the Super level in big moments, and he's thrived in that environment, again, we're coming back to your point, Chip, around Trent Robinson, around his backing the coaching style to be able to give him what he needs to succeed at that level if he does go. But don't put it past, he's a guy that will that I think will love that challenge. And again, it's in his DNA, it's in his blood. There's a lot of royalty with the Piranhas when it comes to rugby league. Mm.
One of the things I loved reading rugby league social media over the last week is because, you know, the rugby league people in Australia love to hate rugby, absolutely love it. And they were like, oh, you know, he's never going to handle the middle of the park. You know, he's just one of these rugby players. And I thought, you guys have never seen this bloke. Yeah. He, like you said, like the most competitive man in the whole world. But also just, he loves the physical stuff.
Oh, he lives for it.
Yeah.
He lives for that confrontation.
He's going to be in it.
He'll do a hit and he'll do the old Kidwell standover. He'll give it the old...
Arwen Gutenberg.
Yeah, the old David Kidwell. No, and I think sometimes you can get caught up in those stats as well. Like, so sometimes you're the second or third tackler in and you get those stats that are quite misleading. They don't quite show the full picture. And sometimes, you know, like we'll get celebrated for 15 tackles, you know, but you've also hit 30 rucks. So if you add that together, it's 45, you know, and it's, there's so many ways that you could argue it's similar, but there's no point because it's never going to be heard. There is a different level of fitness. It's a different fitness.
Yeah.
So there will be a shift in terms of how you'll have to train and get fit for it, but no doubt he'll be making those adjustments already if he's doing it.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if RTS is doing similar things right now, making phone calls. During his 100th game, he looked like he was 100% rugby league, like he was all over it.
I'm sure he's done the phone calls before he signed, surely.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm sure he's probably... He'd be looking into it because he's got to come back to rugby at some point. So he'll be doing some stuff outside of the rugby league realm of learning what to do, I assume.
There's no text messages coming through to you.
Not to me.
Yeah.
I'd say it'd be more to Matt Duffy.
Yeah, fair enough. It's pretty exciting, though. Like, I know we've got a lot of wingers, we've got a lot of fullbacks, we've got all that stuff, but watching RTS on the weekend, Bryn, watching him do what he does and then thinking, boy, you're going to be taking on some tired defenders in the last 20 minutes in a rugby game. No one's going to stop you.
And also a lot more tired than, like, league forwards are not like rugby type five. You know, like, yeah. they are quite a lot fitter mould, if you know what I mean. Like, it's a different sort of athlete. So he will be able to cause some serious damage late in games.
Mm, some props are going to be lurking and left in his dust.
Oh, yeah. You wouldn't want to be on those wide channels.
Well, you look at Sock, you know, Satoru, you know, a guy with his kind of footwork, you know, very similar to Rog, who's got a great left foot, actually both feet, actually. So, but I think, anytime, you know, you're probably going to back those coaches around when he does come in, they'll have the plans in place for him to try and upskill himself as quick as he can into the season next year. But you look, when he's in space, depending on playing at fullback or winger, you know, you're gonna look at that team sheet and be thinking, oh, my marking Roger and that left or right wing-back. So it's gonna be great for the game when he does finally come in next year.
It's gonna be difficult at the same time, like you say, coming over to this game is hard.
Well, I think you've already heard Leon come out and say, we're not gonna rush him.
Yeah.
It is going to take time. And that they've already taken that pressure off him.
Yeah.
So he will not be rushed. And whether he starts at fullback or he might even start on the wing and transition to fullback, I don't know.
Yeah.
They haven't said anything like that to me, I'm just guessing. But he came out when it was announced and said, look, it will take time.
Let's take a look at this week in Sky Super Rugby Aotearoa. We have the Blues versus the Crusaders. Now, take us back a couple of months to March, and this game we were talking, I was one of the people who was guilty of doing this, talking about, hey, the Blues win this, this will be the thing that stops the Crusaders going all the way. They're going to be unstoppable for the rest of the year. Now we look at this game, the Blues are a little bit wobbly. The Crusaders aren't doing as well as we think they should, even though they're still 7 points ahead on the table. And this game's a completely different look.
I think both sides might be keeping under the radar this week. I don't think we'll see anywhere near the level of hype.
Yeah, we haven't. Well, we've had a day off today, so we probably get in the morning, so then I'll be able to give a little bit more to you in the later part of the week.
Yeah, I do think, I think where things are at, you know, where the teams were at last time they played, there was a hell of a lot of hype. I'm looking from the outside in. I think it's going to be all business in both sides.
Yeah.
I don't think there'll be too much worried about the hype. I think both sides are going to be focused heavily on themselves and getting themselves right.
I think first and foremost, about Blues, Crusaders fixtures, it doesn't matter where we are on the table or whatever it is, it's a big game. So, yep, there was probably a little bit more hype
half your team
last time.
Didn't you?
Those changes last weekend, were they more just about rotation and freshness as opposed to anything other than, you know, people saying, oh, geez, is that a respect thing? Are they waiting off for the Blues? What are we talking
it's
here?
Definitely rotation.
Just rotation.
Those boys had played so many minutes.
Yeah.
Like, they definitely, like, I'll even jump in. Like, I know I was trying to wind them up. It was definitely, like, and that game went to 90 minutes. And, like, use Sam Whitelock, for example. That guy has played out of his skin and played a number of minutes. Cody Taylor coming off the bench, like, he's had the season of his life. Like, you can't just keep putting them out there. You just can't. Mm. Not in this competition.
Well, and that's the hard thing about Super Rugby Aotearoa, is that at any point you could be tripped up. And any time you're running that thing where people go, oh, you didn't bring your full team here. Yeah. It's like, well, we can't say that every week.
Yeah. No, sorry to jump in there, Bryn, but it's sometimes if you just answer that, it sounds like a PR spin. So I just didn't want...
Yeah.
Because it's definitely, you have to give guys a rest, a break.
Mm.
And no doubt, I'm sure they would have wanted to play. I know Sam Whitelock certainly wants to play every minute of every game.
Yeah.
But he'll be fresh and ready to go for the Blues, unfortunately, this week.
You are.
Why can the Blues win this?
I just think the reason they were unhappy with the Highlanders' performance is because probably of their own individual errors and their discipline. So I think if they can just focus on themselves and go back to that simple game plan that, you know, you used to talk about styles, they know their style because when they did it, when they have that simple game plan and they build phases and pressure and execute and you know, have you know, utilised their teammates, they can score tries like Rico's try, for instance. They don't make it look hard when they build those phases. It's like, there you go, that's how we should do it. So I think that'll be a big focus. The big focus will be on them, which is, I think, is a great way to go into a Crusaders week. Rather than building up the big hysteria of Blues Crusaders, I think they'll be primed and just focused on themselves and nailing themselves. And I think that if they can tick off the discipline, can't give the Crusaders any ins, and nailing and executing our own roles, as in the Blues, you know, execute on attack and defence and set piece. Set piece is big, especially down there, you know, huge. If they can get that set piece, execute on attack and defence, win that breakdown, because you've heard here, Bryn has stated the last 2 weeks, maybe three, we're not happy with our breakdown. We're not happy with our breakdown. We're not happy with our breakdown. So you know there is going to be a backlash at some point. So I would say that the Blues will have heard that, and if not, well, you know that they will rectify that and know that it's coming, because they lost the breakdown as well, probably against the Highlanders. And I know someone like Dalton prides himself in that breakdown. He's a breakdown leader, so he'll be sharpening up that as well. So, you know, that set piece, the breakdown, accuracy, discipline. If they can bring that and look after themselves, I think they can get the result.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.